Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had...
Loan up big stocks and jacks, half time out. Andrew on the board, SP Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 58. This is after a down day yesterday, the first down day after seven up days. We're not supposed to go down. Let's pour some money in there. Let's get that market up. We have Professor Kevin.
Morning.
Good morning. I'll bet Kevin does not have 15% of his portfolio in gold, like all the big shots now are saying he should have.
No, why put it in gold when you got Bitcoin?
Oh, but now they want everybody in gold. Of course, Bitcoin's running up too. So it is always interesting to me, Kevin, when I listen to the big shots. And this particular big shot is Ray Dalio. By the way, he's very successful. I mean, I've heard him on TV. He's not a dummy at all. And should we, like, if we had a bunch of dough, should we, like, buy a bunch of calculators and send them to some of these people? So just think of it for a second, Kevin. 15% of everybody's portfolio in gold. What do you think the total value of the market cap of the U.S. stock market is? Now, this is not including bonds. It's not including money markets. Nothing like that. What do you suppose the total value is?
Well, you tell me. I'm not going to guess.
It's $50 trillion. So are we to think that, and I think the bond thing is bigger, but I'm not positive, but say it's almost the same amount. Do we really think that we want $7.5 trillion in gold? For God's sake, why?
Well, I'm assuming that's a rhetorical question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming at this with, and I guess I don't act like a money manager on the air, but I am. I should say, God, I got all my people in gold all year. We've had a great year. And I explained yesterday, I have a real lot of people in gold and gold miners index and silver. A lot of it because a lot of times I don't get people's whole portfolio, where their whole portfolio might be in 401ks, and somebody might already have all their money, quote, in the market, and they have some extra money, and they talk to me about it, and I said, well, we really don't need to duplicate the stuff you're doing in all those other places. So sometimes we'll pick an index they're not in. My brother Dan has a lot of people in the XLV, which is the healthcare stuff, because people, or he might have some people in the oils. Not because, you know, we just said, oh my God, the XLV is going. We looked at what other people, the rest of them have, and they might actually have their other stuff. They might be in say high tech or something, in their 401k. So we try and balance one against the other. So it just so happens that we have a lot of people that in the gold miners. Matter of fact, it's probably my biggest position for a lot of people because they got a lot of stuff other places. Now, again, if I was an ass, I would say I put them in there and told them to get out of their other stuff. No, I didn't. It just complemented what they had in other places. And we've been in this for, it's got to be at least 3 years, Kevin. And I'm going to say that stuff didn't budge. I mean, because we had it protected and had some puts on it, would run down, would make some money on the puts, and it'd come back up. So we actually, even though it didn't move, we made some money. I mean, that, you know, nothing to write home about. And all of a sudden this year, it's like up 2.5 times. Well, I could say I was the total genius and bought all of this on January 1st, and look how much I did better than everybody else. But that would not be true, right? I mean, I'm in there. That's the problem you have when you match everybody's portfolio up to them. Because you end up having a real lot of individual success stories, but you can't average them. You can't just say, oh, God, my people in gold are up, 200% this year, so that's my track record. You can't say that. First of all, by rule, you can't say that because I'm a registered guy. And secondly, I agree with the rule. I mean, I shouldn't be able to say that because I'm not counting the stuff they have in the other places that I don't manage and those other kinds of things, which you're supposed to do, right? I mean, if you have any kind of common sense in this world, any decency, that's what you do. So, but I don't see how the hell I got the GDXs at 7861. I think it started the year around 30 or 32 or something. I'm real nervous up here. I would have a real problem going out and saying everybody needs to pile into gold at 4,000. Gods, I mean, I actually think it's going higher, Kevin, because I mean, I think the Fed and other people have been doing it on their own, and now they're getting kind of a push by the current administration to do even more on the increasing the money supply, meaning lowering the value of the dollar. So if that happens, you'll see gold continuing to go up. But you know, I don't know if you've ever been a trader, but you know I am. Can I possibly be excited about gold at 4,000 as I was at 2? How can I be?
Well,
I'd rather go back to last year and be able to put some more in at 2, don't you think?
Well, I would guess so. I mean, you're kind of out of my area here, so.
But it's kind of common sense, though, isn't it? I mean,
I get the common sense part of it, but yeah, I'm not going to be the one opining on, what people's portfolio mix needs to look like.
Well, I think what I'm kind of actually to drag out of you is, I think you sense what's going on with the dollar, and not just the last 8 months. This has been going on for 20 years, so I'm not going to blame this on the current administration, except they seem to be embracing it, I'll say verbally, where the other guys just probably embraced it quietly. It still got embraced, right, or it wouldn't have happened. I mean, I don't know if we as a society, I mean, I start to see it every day, and I want to go into what you sent me yesterday about your Elkhart counties and stuff. You see it in individual conversations you have with people all over the place. I'm at the club the other night. I ran into this guy's named George, and he works for one of these mortgage places. And he was saying he's got to find something else. And I go, all right, well, what's going on? He says, well, when I joined the place, he's probably been there 10 years. He goes, I was making 60 or something. It's 10 years later, and I'm making like 70. He goes, that's not, or 68 or something. He goes, it's up, but it's nowhere near, the apartment, my rent, and other stuff. I'm not even close, not to mention stuff like cars and everything else. I think there's a lot of that going on, Kevin, and I think that people who own stuff have done exceptionally well because we really are lowering the value of the dollar for a 25-year deal. I mean, it's like the extended Weimar Republic, and I don't know if enough people even know that's happening and who benefits and who doesn't, but to me, I've been doing this my whole life, it's so damn obvious, and I don't, instead of me playing the market for my client, playing the market for me, investing for my clients using any kind of common sense, I'm just sitting there going, you know what, they're going to keep doing this, I got to stay along this crap, even though it's incredibly high. I never would have thought that 15 years ago. My whole investment world has changed. Now, I'm just playing the cards I'm being dealt, and for a long time, I would say they're not going to keep doing this. They must know they're killing anybody who doesn't own stuff. But you know what, Kevin? Whoever the theys are, and again, it's not just the last 8 months. Whoever the theys are clearly in control, and they're driving this bus. And other people don't know what's happening to them, but they know it's not good. Just saying. Hey, one of the listeners sent me a list of 22 states now in recession. And by the way, Indiana, by the way, is expanding. They're one of the ones that is still expansion, which you mentioned when you sent that stuff over. They've got Michigan in a treading water spot. They've got Illinois in a recession. First of all, tell everybody
sounds
what you sent.
Right.
What?
Sounds about right.
The one question I have about that though is, if you take the county you're talking about, the South Bend Elkhart area out. I guess you could throw Hammond in there, which would be the industrial stuff. You know, I really don't know what all the where all the jobs are in Indianapolis, other than it's the state capital and stuff. And you take the Chicago piece, good or bad, out of Illinois, you're pretty much an agrarian state. I mean, if you drop below I-80, right? And from what Greg Pappas has been telling us, the farmers are having a horse bleep year. And I wonder what percentage of Indiana and Illinois' economy is. And I'm not saying the farmers are going broke, but I think they're having a crummy year, and I think some of the ones up north because of the soybean stuff are in bad shape. But they've got, this thing has almost every farm state in a recession. Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana are in recessions. That's the only farm state that is expansion is Indiana. What would you call Nebraska? Is that a farm state? I don't know.
I would say primarily a farm state, because even the Omaha's, even Omaha's industry is built very much around.
There was more cattle than anyway, but they've got those guys. This map has those guys in an expansion. They've got Ohio in Treadwater, and those are in Wisconsin's Treadwater. So those are pretty much your California Treadwater. Obviously, they're in an agricultural state. Down south, this is interesting. Georgia and Mississippi, they have in recessions, but they've got Alabama in an expansion. Why do you suppose that is? I don't know if about
look at the industry profile there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what do you make of Indiana? Is the percentage of the state's GDP starting to grow in the upper areas? So now it's doing better than even if the farmers aren't doing so hot, or what?
The state has always had a really solid state budget, but the last couple of years it doesn't. The previous governor really just kind of gorped everything up. But you know, there's a lot of manufacturing industry. There's a fair amount of high tech manufacturing, and it shows up in places where you really wouldn't expect it. So there's a good tech sector. There's some good tech sectors in various places, Indianapolis, and even though Salesforce.com is not the star that it used to be, that's a big employer and a big
was that their hub? I mean,
yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay.
So that's a big one, but you also, you know, you also have a lot of high tech industry in places like Lafayette. With Purdue there, that's a big deal, and you're probably getting a better sample of integrating some of the universities in with the local economies and developing things. You know, Notre Dame's involved in a lot of tech development up here where I am, and so with IU in Bloomington and with Purdue and Lafayette, those are big ones, and even the southern part of the state has a certain amount of tech sector growth. So I think that's what you're seeing.
Yeah, and
what I sent Tom that was interesting is we know nationally the labor participation rate is what, like
58%. Yeah.
And it's 62.3 for the state of Indiana. So there's a lot more people.
It's a huge difference. It's a huge difference.
And the unemployment rate is 3.6% compared to the national 4.3. And then, if you look at it in certain certain regional areas, what do I have for you? South Bend, Mishawaka, 95.8.
That's really something.
Which is really something. And then you go over to Elkhart, and it's 68.7, which is still really huge. So those are, those are big deals. Now, again, it's not all great jobs. There's a lot of service stuff, a lot of hospitality in the South Bend area that's built around Notre Dame being there.
But it's also getting your ass out of the house and not sitting there listening to whatever side of hate TV you want to listen to all day.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is.
It's healthy.
And so you have to go back and look at the unemployment rates, too. but it's people who are either actively looking or they're employed. And, and it may be part cultural, too.
Well, you know, the numbers you just gave me, you listened to my chatter for long enough. I don't believe the unemployment rate for crap. What you just gave me is a real number. But what do I care if somebody's looking or not looking?
I think any rate stuff is questionable, but they're all being measured the same way. So if it's bad measuring process, it's the same one across the board.
Well, I don't believe the part.
Harrison.
Well, you're telling me how many people are working versus not working. Do I really care if out of the people not working, 4 or 5% of them are looking for a job? What's the difference? They're all not working.
Well, that's true, except that when people either give up or are not inclined to look in the first place, that's.
I just don't like the way they count. When you fall off the check, you're all of a sudden not looking. I think that's. Yes. Hey, a question for you. I mean, and you're the only person on the show I can really sort of answer this to. What some areas, like you just mentioned, Lafayette with Purdue, and one of the, I don't know how you never came skiing with us all the years we went skiing. Whenever we drive across Nebraska and you went by Lincoln.
I hit my knee when I was a senior in high school and stopped skiing.
Okay. That's that would be the reason. Well, you still could have gone to the Opry ski bars and hang around the hot tub all day with the girls.
I could have done that.
Yeah, anyway. Well, when we first started driving across Nebraska, this is foggy, a long time ago. I'm going to say Lincoln had, where the University of Nebraska is, two exits, maybe. Now, last time I went by there, which had to be 20-some years ago, they had probably had 5 or 6, Kevin. The University of Nebraska just expanded the hospitals, the tech sector, I think. And they've done that kind of like a weed and become, a pretty serious hotbed where people want to go live in Lincoln with the sports and all the other stuff and the jobs. And I think Purdue has done that. But then in South Bend, when you and I went to Notre Dame, the city in Notre Dame didn't even talk. The town was a kind of a bleep hole. It was they had big industries that had left. I mean, Studebaker left. You could see the old plant there.
Right, he left. Associates Corporation left.
Bendix still there, but now they're not, right? I mean,
not now, though.
But so, I mean, the town was just, there was nothing like this, and yet. And you talk about Purdue, I think Indiana, from what Russell says, is kind of the same way. Yet I don't know that Champaign has ever become a hotbed of stuff. I mean, some of the places like Western Illinois down to Macomb, I think Macomb's really hurting. I mean, how does some place get this marriage, for lack of a better term, between that?
Macomb's issues, and I think last I knew they were trying to address it, is that you couldn't get there from anywhere else easily. And so that gets to be part of the problem is, are you accessible? And it's one of the things South Bend has going for it because it has a lot of rail crossing through South Bend. It's not far from the Port of Indiana on Lake Michigan. And it has major highways. That's one of the things Indianapolis has going for it. There are so many major interstate highways that crisscross through that as a distribution center, just if nothing else, as a product distribution center, it's perfect location because consider not only access to for trucking, but then consider how many places you can reach in a 4-hour time frame from Indianapolis. How much of the population can you reach? How much of the population can you reach in a 1-day drive from Indianapolis? It's really good for distribution. South Bend is that way too with the US 31 North and South, I-94 nearby, and then of course the toll road going across.
Well, I think Columbus is a big beneficiary of Ohio State, aren't they?
Yeah. So that's part of it. The other part of it is, you're right, Notre Dame and the town didn't used to work together. Now they do. And you don't see it, I mean, the obvious example is that Eddy Street Commons area, just, adjacent to Notre Dame, where they've done a lot of development. Notre Dame built Innovation Park over there for startup businesses.
Well, the city gave them a street. They gave them a school. They condemned a lot of property for them. They helped them out.
Yeah. And there were some good things that have happened. Now, you know, South Bend's still got a ways to go. You go out the west side of town, it still looks like the hood.
Well, yeah, it looks like you're driving through Mississippi.
Yeah, but you know what? One of the things that that South Bend has done, and this is something Detroit did to help start its comeback, was they just took all the blighted properties and knocked them down.
Well, it's nice if it's not your property, I guess. But
well, especially if they're not paying any income taxes, they're abandoned.
Yeah.
You just have when the dilapidated homes are there, you have places for drug sellers and gangs and people like that to hang out, and that's not good.
Well, you know what Indianapolis was, I won't say famous for, because nobody's know what I'm talking about. I'm going to say 25 years ago, they were unique among American cities. They were the only...
unique 25 years ago, besides our buddies, the Flynns and the Macaulays.
Well, they were the only city over a million people, not a navigable body of water.
Oh, that's interesting.
And all your other cities are. Cleveland, Cincinnati.
Yeah, you don't have to go very far from Indianapolis down to the Crane Naval Facility.
Yeah.
Which is actually closer to Bloomington. There's a big naval facility there, despite no water being there.
Well, if you look at pictures, and there are a lot of, we should probably, one of these days, do some work on the site and put the pictures of Chicago in the early 1900s and the port of Chicago and the amount of shipping coming in and out of Chicago River. There were more ships came in and out of Chicago on a daily basis than any other port in the country except for New Orleans. Now, they weren't the size ships that came into New York, but they were ships. Great Lakes, it was just an incredible amount of shipping going up and down the river.
Yeah, and there still is a pretty healthy shipping traffic pattern on Lake Michigan. And you're right, they just aren't that big, but it still is an inexpensive way to move stuff.
Oh, God, yeah. What do you make of I was asked something intelligent, believe it or not. I was just talking about the. What do you think about what Carl was saying yesterday about the if we get rid of all the cars, which obviously we're not going to do, what do you do with all the gasoline when you refine the oil for jet fuel and diesel and stuff? It's like 2/3 of it comes out gas. But every car is, what are you going to do with it? Interesting question. I never even thought of that, did you?
No. So we're going to be burning gasoline for a long time.
I think so. What do you make of... he was just... Carl can sometimes... if he's listening, I'd love to give him crap. Despite himself, be actually very timely. As soon as I was driving home last night, all everybody was talking about on News Radio 78 was building nuclear plants. And they were talking about, this order of this and this order of that, and then there was a big article in MSNBC on that. Not MSNBC, CNBC. The talking about getting these plants rolling. And does anybody have any idea how long it takes putting these things up, Kevin? I mean, I would say if we...
I think most people do understand that it's a long lead time, but it's an even longer lead time if you don't get started today.
Well, what was the old, when we were kids, what was the old joke? The guy said, I got to plant this tree. And he goes, that tree takes 10 years to grow. He goes, that's why I got to start today. Remember that old joke? Well, your parents would tell you.
I don't remember that particular joke, but that's...
Well, it wasn't really a joke. It'd be my mother would tell me that if I said, I'll do it tomorrow. You just wasted a day. I think, and you're going to get various political factions that will say, well, that's because of all the lawsuits. Kevin, I think if there was if somebody had one ready to go into planning today, and you already had the property, I think it's 10 years even without a lawsuit, don't you? I mean, how could it be any?
It's going to take time, but there will be. But lawsuits are part of it. Yeah, you're going to get some, some environmental pushback people, and so that's going to be a part of it. And I don't know how. And I don't know that we're going to make those go away easily. So, they just become another factor in there. Is it enough of a factor to discourage people from starting in the first place? Is your question?
Well, Do you think
it's expensive? It's not just, you know, it's not just that it's a delay. It's expensive.
Well, do you think that the article I was reading last night, and I should have said it, God damn it, had to do with this people that process uranium in New Mexico. There were like two places in this country that processed uranium, and after the COVID and other stuff, one of them went out of business, and the other one is down to, you know, less capacity than they were. And now they're adding, but evidently we still get 20% of our processed uranium from Russia, which evidently is going the way of the dodo bird now with all the problems with those guys are giving us. And now they're saying that I was talking to my brother Dan yesterday, and we've got, you know, some clients coming in, like we always do, and, you know, I said, okay, what if somebody walks in with a big pile of cash and nothing that they have that they care about, you know, what are we going to do with it? You know, we think we should still be in gold a little bit, but tentative, not like we were, and I think we should. He says, well, these uranium stocks are all the rage. We should talk about doing a few of those, but some of them aren't that big. Now you run into a problem there. But now we're trying to, you know, we don't have the uranium processing capacity, which would be a lot better if what Carl was saying about if one of those breeder reactors ever comes up. But I guess my question is, Kevin, from a guy who I'm not even going to begin to compare a railroad car with, you know, a nuclear plant, but for God's sake, I mean, if somebody popped a railroad, said, I want a railroad car, I could probably still do it from some of the stuff I have at home. I could still schedule it out. I'm going to say a year and a half for a railroad car, Kevin. That's if the design is something close that somebody has, and once you start changing them, you're talking, you know, 4 or 5 months of engineering if it's something different. And this is a railroad car. We're not talking about a nuclear plant. Is there somebody around with a huge stack of prints for the next nuclear plant? We can say, hey, Joe, time to use those things. Look on there. Is there a materials list on them? And what do you order first? I mean, when just to let you know how this goes, and Kevin, you know this, so bear with me for a second. If somebody is going to build I'll just say a railroad car, whatever it is, building, you go to somebody and you say, all right, the first thing you do is somebody starts designing it. And he says, okay, it's going to be this length, this is going to be this. Then you do the key drawings, your undercar arrangement drawing, where all the stuff has to go, because now you have to know, that gives you the dimensions of your air conditioners, all the other stuff, because it's all got to fit. So at the end of the day, the guy goes, okay, here's the side drawing. Okay, you need this piece of metal, maybe we're going to form ourselves. We need this bolt, we need this nut. We got to order all that stuff, right? You got to order the aluminum, if that's what you're using, the stainless steel. Then there's lead times on that. This is for something relatively simple, which still probably has 10,000 parts, a railroad car. I can't imagine, how close do you think we even are to some sort of a design on something we haven't built? And well, one just got done being built down in Georgia, right? It went online about a year ago. So we just finished one. I say we, the U.S. How off-the-shelf ready do you think these things are? Or are we going to do them totally different than we did before? I mean, I have no idea. But, I mean,
the other question is how much you're going to use AI to design it much faster.
Well, AI scrubs the Internet looking for ways to cheat on people that have already done. I don't think there's anything on it. It's already done. I think it's all going to be done the old way.
Well, yes and no. I'll give you an example. I have an exercise in a class I designed that basically said, I want you to go out to an AI engine, give it a company profile, and ask it to design your wide area network for your computer systems for it. Now, you know, it obviously, wide area network design is pretty much a commodity, so it's not inventing anything so completely new that nobody's going to know how to do it. But on the other hand, it is specific to a company profile, and you know, it's come up with a design. This is nothing, you know, so revolutionary that it's a mind blower. But by the same token, it does speed things up, and that's pretty much where the state of the art on AI is. But people are using it, you know, for demand planning, and they're using it for oh crap, they're using it for scheduling their routes. They're using it for managing carbon footprints. They're using it, there's all kinds of use cases out there where people actually are doing something, and it's nothing you couldn't do yourself, but it's just speeding up the process like crazy.
But I'm certainly not going to argue that it'll be different than a bunch of guys with their behinds on a stool next to a drawing table, but I don't know that, I mean, Carl's mentioned it's got to be 3 or 4 different designs. I don't know what's going up over in Europe. I mean, Bill Moriarty always says his engineering firms have 40,000 people working for him, and there could be a group that just came off a plant in, Germany that everybody loves that plant, and that's what we're going to put up. I mean, it could be, we could be further down the road, but I don't even know if what kind we want to put up now. Do we want to put one of those, what does he say, the salt one, where the stuff doesn't even get all that hot or whatever? I mean, it seems like it would be like a year before we even figured out what we want the thing to look like, wouldn't it?
It may be. And when I'm telling you, when I bring up AI, I wouldn't trust it to have it, here's the blueprint. Thank you. We'll just use it. Thank you for giving it to me. But it can get you, it can like do 80% of your work. And then you get your experts involved. And if things need to be tweaked, changed or whatever, you can. So what I'm saying is that the development life cycle is much shorter than it used to be for all kinds of things.
Well, you don't, even if you were doing the said railroad car, instead of, if you wanted to do a trap door, you know where a trap door is coming? On a railroad car.
Is it something that isn't like a trap door where you open it and climb out underneath?
It's when you go down the steps, most commuter cars have to be designed for both people to walk down the steps, like at the Rock Island or any of the trains here. But then if you're in a station, you have a platform, there's a thing on the side that drops down over the steps so you can walk right out. That's called the trap door. So you can unload both at the conductor can lower that for people going back and forth on the platform, and then he pulls that up when you walk down the steps. It covers the steps. It's a big, heavy thing of corrugated steel. Anyway, but I'm saying, you're right. Nobody has to go down to the basement and dig through 50, prints of a trap door. I'm sure you would AI, or even with a regular computer, you can have it in front of you in a second. So there's no question it's going to be easier, right? Just yes. Right? I mean, what group would decide which kind of one we wanted to build? I mean, I think the safest way would be to build them where they already have them, but I don't know if that, there'd be some pushback.
Chances are you have people who already, have their biases for what it's going to be. So depending on the company, depending on the people involved, I wouldn't doubt that there's a whole lot of decisions that people have already made in their minds as long as they can proceed.
Whenever we talk, Kevin, it leads to one question after another. The Atomic Energy Commission, are they still around? Do they still inspect these plants? Is there enough people there that know what they're doing to have 4 or 5 of these being under construction at the same time, or 10?
Well, I would assume yes, but I can't swear to it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's one thing I remember about, Bill being on, Bill Moriarty, is that a lot of these areas are no longer, they're not really like super high paying, even like your civil engineers for the highway departments in the States. He goes, it's very satisfying work. I mean, you get to do a lot of cool stuff and you work with a lot of good people. He said, what majors at Notre Dame would you even have for that? Does anybody even want to work on the Atomic Energy Commission these days? I don't know anybody's ever going to go in that direction. Have you?
No, doesn't mean they don't, though.
No, I mean, how things going by you? You guys got expanding enrollment or not? I guess University of Illinois is their biggest enrollment ever this year, don't they?
We're hanging in. At our school, we're hanging in. The biggest thing, because we're all over the state and we have so many campuses, that there's a lot of critical mass there. So that's not really the issue. the big issue is, it gets to be two things. So one is keeping people who get started, keeping them engaged. And that's not always easy because I have so many students that have families and they have jobs and they come to school. And, you know, that can be pretty overwhelming for a lot of people, and you get a lot of sidetracks. You know, life just gets in the way for lots of reasons that make it hard for people to persist in school. So, you know, we work really hard to try and help people sort of cope with all of those things. It's not like when you go to Notre Dame and just about everybody on campus only has one job, and that's be a college student. So I have a very different student
body. What do you
mean?
You had to drink? You had to play basketball?
Well, I had to do all those things, and I had a whole lot of fun, as you know. But pretty much your life is a little bit different than the typical community college student.
It's interesting.
The other part is what serves the community. And so one thing that we're pushing really, really hard on right now locally is, if you back up the train a little bit, I've stepped aside because I picked up IT duties a year ago that I didn't have before. I stepped aside as the statewide chair for supply chain management after the summer curriculum committee meeting. But I'm really proud of some of the things that we accomplished. We have certifications in our classes, and we really had a good team of people working there, involved in this. But we also, we've done some technology infusion, but we also rolled out a couple of other credentials. They're certificate level credentials, but it's like six courses in each one. One of them is a supply chain analytics course that really gets into, you know, it uses a lot of IT courses, but then it has a demand planning course, and it has an intro to supply chain management, and that's really there for our IT students to get some additional chops for, if you're an IT analytics student, you're going to go to work in manufacturing or distribution, healthcare maybe, but all things that have supply chain overtones to them. So we wanted to create a credential for them that they could easily stack on top of their analytics degree with just taking a few more courses, and they might even be able to take them as electives. But the other one, and this one is one that I really like, is we have a six-course quality management sequence. And so when we talk about serving the community, and I may have mentioned this before, we have a lot of these mid-sized manufacturing companies, small manufacturing companies, that are very much a seat of the pants operation. And so, I had someone tell me, yeah, our goal is to get to a 97% first pass yield, which means 97% of what we make is sellable, what comes off the end of the production line. The other 3% is either got to go back for rework, and maybe we can spend a little more money to fix it, and then we can sell it, which means it's cutting into your margins, or it's just scrap. It's not sellable, it's scrap, and we have to do it. Well, that's a goal for this company, and you know what? That's a really crappy performance, and we have a lot that are say, so if your goal is 97, where are you? Are you really at 90? Are you in the 80s? Where are you? Because that's a really expensive way to do business, and now we're in a economy with a very high inflation, very high cost of the parts and materials you need to manufacture, and then of course you throw in tariffs and things like that. And as I've said many times, there are most businesses, they don't get to just raise their prices because their cost structure goes up. So now when your cost structure goes up, you better find a way to get that first pass yield up so that you aren't spending so damn much money just fixing things.
Well, that's what I was going to ask is, It matters obviously where the 3% is. If it's in the first 10 are no good, that you can work on. What if you got 10 that are good, one crummy, and the next 10 are good? How the hell do you fix that?
Well, and so what are you doing? I mean, so the whole lean process is all about you know, consistency and continuous improvement. And so you have that whole issue in front of you, and so you can get there. You can get to a real high degree. You know, you can get, you know, if you really are aspirational, you're going to aim at that Six Sigma where you're only getting like three, you know, your average is 3.5 errors on per million opportunities. So you know, that's high performing. That's what that's Motorola's program as an example, and why Motorola is such a great company, because they started down that road in the 1980s. But you know, the reason I bring it up is because we're now I have my workforce group, the people who engage with the workforce, are out trying to build me some cohort programs. So if you send me three or four people and commit to them taking the whole six course sequence, just send them to me once a month. And then, you know, and if I get three companies that send me three or four people, I can go with this. You know, that's enough to make it worth my time. And the more we do, the more jealousy amongst others will kick in. And, you know, fear of missing out is also a powerful motivator. I'd like to fill them with, you know, 20 or 25 people per class. But the point is, bring your people in, commit them to being in the whole program, and give me three of your really brightest and best, and have them bring at least one, and maybe more than one, serious problem that you have in your manufacturing process. Or if it's service delivery, we can work around that. We can do lean with that, too.
Only make right turns. Only make right turns when you service and deliver
right
stuff.
Turns. But you start, so what we do is we focus in each course. So the courses are good. There's an intro to supply chain management course. You get a supply chain principles course. But the focus is going to be all about process mapping as we go through. Because whatever the real process map is, whatever all the steps are in the process, you can bet your bottom dollar that's not what the standard operating procedures say. That it's totally different from that, and that's a disconnect, because it makes it really, really hard for you to improve things when you don't even understand the process. If you can't map out your process, you don't know what you're doing. So we'll spend some time on that. We go to the second course, which is a lean course, and you start applying the lean analytical tools, the main analytical tools, and there's six of them, to start building yourself up.
Do you guys have courses in what, I don't know what they call them now, they used to call them manufacturing engineers, that would actually take the drawings and make the, essentially,
yeah,
design?
Not my program, but we do have engineering, yes. But what you do with lean is it's all statistical stuff.
Okay.
You know, so you're working with statistics, but you have to develop. In the project management world, there's an approach called Scrum, and you attack a backlog of things. Because continuous improvement, you know, look, if you can get the big kill, the one big thing that fixes everything, that's cool. But those don't come along very much.
No, I would admit. What do you see the drop off in? I won't say performance, because they're doing other stuff. What do you see? Because I remember this in grad school, and my lawyer buddies tell me about it. People go to law school at night versus during the day. Like you say, it's your real job versus it's your second job. What do you see the drop-off of people who come in the morning and learn a class, and then people that work all day and have a family at home and can't wait for them to be there and they're at night? I'm sure they're trying real hard, but what's the drop-off in performance?
I'm trying to do a cohorted program. You give me the people on your dime, on your clock.
Okay.
You give them to me for a half a day once a week.
Okay, that I bet you're going to do a lot better on. Because, I mean... Well, I mean, people.
I already do that with one business. They send me their people once a week.
Well, I mean, people go to law school after work. It's just hard.
Yeah, it is hard. You know, I did it. I didn't go to law school. I got my master's degree, and I did 26 courses in 22 months with a family and with a full time job in management. So yeah, it was really hard. So, but we go into the lean tools. What we're doing is we're developing the list of things to attack, which rolls right into your project management course. Okay, let's learn how to do Scrum, and let's learn how to manage those projects. And so each step of the way, they're working on their real world issues. Then we go into our procurement class, and you start bringing your suppliers into your process. And from there, we go into our ISO 9001 class, which my emphasis on that is moving into audits, getting away from inspections. Because as you said earlier, what happens if, you know, the first three are right and the next three are wrong? The only way you can address that to keep bad stuff from going out the door is inspections, but that's expensive. So once you get your process under control, you need to move away from the expensive inspections, but you still have to audit once in a while to make sure nothing falls out of bed. And that takes us into the finale, which is a green belt course. And they earn that. That's built around the projects. But the emphasis there is leadership back into your company, so we can take you back and you can spread this, spread this process to more people.
At Pullman, they used to take all your parts, the ones that you could. They sent the drawings to something called a template shop, and they would use pretty serious hardwood and make the hardwood exactly the right size and the holes in exactly the right spot. So whenever you wanted to check your machine, all you had to do was shove the template in there to see if the machine had moved, which they can do.
There's a whole lot of stuff that you do with. You go, especially in the ISO 9000 world. There's a lot of prescribed stuff on, you know, maintaining calibration. But we get into, you know, total maintenance management.
So a kid walks in the door there right out of high school.
Wait until your machine's not doing it right. You have to stay on top of it.
Well, a kid walks in the door right out of high school. Do they initially start out with what would generally be considered a regular junior college program, like the first couple of years of college, and then wander off into one or two of these other kind, I won't say other, but more focused kind of classes? And do people do both, or is it one or the other usually?
They do a lot of different approaches. So, in the supply chain world, I don't get a lot of kids out of high school. I get people who are working in the field in the first place. But say in the IT world, we do get a lot of kids out of high school. We get some people doing career changes too, and they want to come in and they want to get a job. And in IT, a bachelor's degree is good, but an associate's degree or even a certificate is still a pathway into a job that pays pretty well.
You get guys taking, you know, accounting, English, math, how to do brakes on a car type of thing?
Not very often. Sometimes you'll see it because we have an entrepreneurship program. And the way the entrepreneurship program is, you start out with an idea, you leave with a business plan and hopefully with financing. So that's a different process altogether. And so we will get people who have taken some business, but now I want to open my mechanic shop. I want to open my bakery. I want to open my restaurant, whatever it is that they have in mind. So you will see some combinations in there. But the business students, by and large, they're ready to go get a bachelor's degree. So they're just, you know, they're staying at home. They're taking advantage of the lower tuition. They're still getting all of their core courses in. You know, management and accounting and so on. So they're getting those, and then they're going to transfer to, you know, maybe to Indiana. Maybe they go take classes from Russell. But they may just as well transfer to IU South Bend or Bethel College here or Goshen College here and get a business degree. Like IU or Purdue, Fort Wayne. You know, one of those schools.
So there's not much fall off. I mean, your guys when they hit junior year with Russell, well, if they ask Russell, it'll be on a little bit. I mean, are they can he tell a difference between one of your guys and a guy with his first 2 years in Indiana?
Probably go ahead not. And ask him, because Russell has always said that, you know, he gets great students from Ivy Tech.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's always been very positive about it. I mean, absolutely. Yeah.
So the business program is a little bit different animal. Just like in the IT world, if you major in computer science, you're probably going for a bachelor's degree. But if you major in cybersecurity, you can walk out with industry certifications. You could just do a certificate there and be ready to go to work. Or you major in IT support, you're ready, you know, you finish our program, you just even finish the core of our program, you're ready to go work on somebody's help desk. And then if you want to come back and study some more network engineering or cybersecurity after the...
How many of your professors are full-time, or do you borrow a bunch from business?
Very few. I have a couple of full-time IT professors, and I have a full-time supply chain professor plus me.
And all the other...
We have a lot of adjunct professors. We have some really good ones.
Well, I imagine you would. I mean, guys are coming from... I would have loved to take a tax course from Bob. I mean, I can't do it now. Bob's no longer with us, but I bet that would have been spectacular. I mean, imagine what you could have learned in there. How many people in the world even knew the stuff he knew? I mean, there can't have been too many. I hate to lob criticism, but boy, oh boy, Kevin, that game on Saturday was 90 degrees. The thing took how many hours with all the penalties and stuff? How would you like to have been sitting there? Good Lord.
There were a lot of weird penalty calls too. So it wasn't just that there were a lot of them. A lot of them didn't seem like they should have been called.
That seems to be I've heard 15 people tell me that about the pro games this weekend too. What is this a thing where we're trying to get people to not cheat going into the rest of the year, and I'm going to lay off on it, or what?
It could be setting a tone.
I remember we went to for those that don't know, Notre Dame Stadium. The new part, the upper part's not horrible, but the down part is designed for people that are 175 pounds in a 2.5 hour game, not people that average like 200 and something now in a 4 hour game. We went to one of those days, it was 90 degrees, we're in the end zone, and we're sitting there, and Audrey, her last time, and I can't say as I blame her, Kevin, big fat guy sitting in front of us with the wife beater t-shirt. She leaves the game, the entire front of the shins on her blue jeans are soaked through with the guy's sweat. I don't think she's real happy with that.
Yeah, they did, actually, the last round of stadium renovation, they actually shrank the size, the capacity of the stadium, and did create a little more room, upper and lower.
I mean, if you were at the end of the seat, you had to sit down real fast. Otherwise, it was like the Three Stooges. You'd end up sitting on a step, right? When everybody sat down, there wasn't enough room.
That was true everywhere in that stadium for a long time, but it's not so much anymore.
All right. Well, it's a long, what do you think? All these people losing ahead of them. Is there anybody going to be undefeated at the end of the year?
Well, there might be a couple, but yeah, some people came back to two losses this week, and there's a whole bunch more teams that are going to take losses next week. In some cases, like, you know, Alabama playing Missouri, somebody's going to lose that game. So,
what do you make of it? How does Ohio State manage to stay ahead of the pack like this? I mean, Penn State keeps thinking they're getting there, and they just never do. Michigan did the 1 year, and then the coach left for cheating, right? And So, Ohio State seems to be able to maintain this high level really kind of better than anybody else now. They got to be the only school that made the transition, I'm going to say, from the old world to the new world. Alabama couldn't and still be that dominant. They've made the transition into the NIL from the old way of cheating. I don't know if I should say that. Well, but
Ohio State has, and they, you know, they still lose people to transfer, and they get people to transfer in, but they do really well managing that. And I think there are different degrees of models, because Clemson's one that hasn't done well in transfer world.
Well, neither's Alabama, really. They're still pretty good, but I mean, they're not dominant. And the coach quit when he saw the new world, right? Pretty much.
Well, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and, you know, Saban was an older guy anyway, so he was going to quit at some point.
Have you heard him talk about it on?
He just didn't want any part of it. Yeah.
I mean, you hear him talk about it on the College Game Day or in general, and that's exactly the point. He was like, we just, you know, forever, my wife and I had been having players over, telling the families what we thought we could do about them, making their sons better people, and now it's we have them over and they're like, how much are we gonna get paid? So. And he decided, I just don't want to be part of that. And I don't blame him. I feel like if I were a college coach, I would flip over to the pros in a heartbeat, given the opportunity, just because it's a more organized process of paying people. And I feel like As a pro coach, you have more leverage over your players than you do as a college coach. And honestly, I wouldn't want to deal with people between 18 and 22 years old if I didn't have the leverage of their grades like I do right now. You know,
well,
you're right. It's a tough age group to manage. Everybody's on a 1 year contract, so they can flip you off anytime.
Oh, and, yeah.
And so it's difficult. You know, if I were 45 years old, I might say, okay, I have to adapt and thrive in the new world. If I were Saban's age, I'd say, don't need this.
Yeah.
Hey, next week, if we can get...
I have a hard stop for 8 o'clock, so I got to go.
All right, you got to go. Real quick, Kevin. Next week, if we get maybe Russell on a little bit earlier, I actually scribbled down a few things on how all this stuff in college football and basketball, I guess, if it was thought of earlier, could have gone a whole different way. And I just want to run it by you guys and see how wet
it's gonna. And the thing is, it's gonna. This is what's going on right now. Is we're in a transition process. And I know. Go, Kevin. Go. But
yeah, I'll just say one thing. It's not thought of earlier. It's the NCAA fought any changes tooth and nail until they finally took their loss.
Give up.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Well, let's kick it around because I have like five things scribbled down that if people had assessed what was happening along the way. Probably could have made some changes, and that got we're not where we are now.
That's what's going on right now, and while that's going on right now, and there's kind of a push to somewhat regulate it, or you know, come up with a salary cap, or just whatever, you know, come up with some sort of rules. While we're in that process, if you've got $2 billion and you are a diehard Texas Tech, alumni. And I'm using that school as a specific example because they are totally. I think they're going to win the national championship.
Could be.
Actually, and nobody talks about them, but they've got a very very high payroll, and they either came in second or almost won the NCAA softball championship because they bought a few players off of the West Coast, or they brought in some really good players, and all of a sudden became a dominant softball program. But a lot of alums are looking at this like I got a 2-3-4 year window where I can help my school out and try to win a championship because there's this feeling that the rules are going to change at some point in the near future, and they're not going to be able to throw a whole ton of money at a single year to try to win something. That's really what we're seeing is we're seeing the transition process.
I think we are,
But you know what else we're seeing? We're seeing the transition process in, I don't care about college football anymore, and that's freaking amazing because that used to be my whole Saturday.
Well, I'm kind of going down. But, Russell.
And that's going to be the long-term negative.
But let's zero in on as you know, I'm nothing on any kind of level. Mm-hmm. I pretty much coach, general manager, whatever, softball team for 40 years. Every year is a new team, certainly in baseball and everything. Saw guys saying that last night after some major league playoff games. Mm-hmm. Well, the player goes, hey, every year is a new team. Different leadership, different people. Every year is a new team. I think that the average fan, my grandmother used to say, the armchair quarterback, doesn't have anywhere near the sense of how difficult it is to mold a new team together in terms of is there leadership on the team helping you out? You have talent. You have this. Are they going to play together? Is every one of them, did you just recruit 22 prima donnas where if somebody else scores the winning touchdown, they're pissed off that it didn't get thrown to them? I mean, it's look at the year Nian Dien when he went to Colorado. All of a sudden they suck. Look at Belichick getting his ass kicked every week. It's not as easy.
And on Deion Sanders, don't say all of a sudden they suck. They already suck.
Well, but I'm saying he brought all his people in, and everybody thought.
Any better.
No, but the idea was he got rid of all these crummy guys. He brought in all these good guys. And by the way, next week nobody's going to want to play him. Now he started out, I think, sort of halfway decent, but that is way more difficult to do than anybody gives. I wouldn't want no part of a softball team where he just gave me 10 or 11 really good guys and say, do something with them. Mm-hmm. This guy wants to play first base. No, this guy wants to play first. I mean, you can't have all egos like that, you know, and you can't
that's another part of it is, you know, I doubt you have any. I mean, I look around and considering the start that I had, I am damn lucky to be where I am. I severely doubt that there's many 18 to 22 year olds that are getting seven figures to play football that feel anything other than I deserve this.
Oh yeah,
you know, that's I was at the I happened to be in New York when the I know this is a huge stretch, but I think it's a good example. I was in New York when the Women's World Cup team parade was going on. I was just trying to get from one meeting to another, and that awful woman with the short pink hair was actually heard at the parade screaming out, "I effing deserve this."
Well,
she deserved her parade. And you know, that we've got a women's rugby team that's become very popular on social media here, and they just made one of those rugby people into a Barbie. They didn't make any of the women's soccer team into a Barbie, which I just think is, you know, it just shows, you know, a big contrast there. The women's rugby team came in third.
I want to see
everybody liked them so much. You know, they're everywhere now.
I want to see a Barbie of a women's Barbie of a shot putter.
Oh, you're mean. You're just being mean.
No, I'm not.
You're just being mean.
I mean, you know, but let me. We got a minute because
they actually had a variety of female athletes in there as well.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, hey, those shot putters.
That's a serious sport. They based you know, the Ilona Meyer, who's the U.S. kind of like the face of women's rugby in the U.S. right now, just an absolutely fantastic person.
Anybody, you know, at that level,
that's the kind of person that you want on your team.
Oh yeah.
And if everybody is just playing for the money, and the U.S. women's soccer team, you know, when they asked that awful pink—I can't even remember her name—but that woman with the pink hair, they asked her what her career has come to an end now. What were you most proud of? She was getting us higher pay, not winning the World Cup, not inspiring kids.
Oh, that's
not, you know, it was getting us higher pay.
Well, let me.
And I don't want to root for people like that. And
no.
And I feel like. Yeah, and the other thing is the NIL stuff. The college football, and really, my day off is Friday or Saturdays. I actually have student office hours on Saturday mornings from 9 to about noon, and then at noon I don't work. The only time I really don't work is Saturday afternoons, and it used to be on the couch, you know, channel surfing for college football. Well, now there's games on streaming, which they have to do to raise more money. And, you know, when you got got one game on streaming and other games on ESPN, et cetera, you know, channel surfing around at games is a pain in the ass. And then finding them is difficult. There's games on WGN now, which is not a normal place that you go searching for them. So the ease with which you could be a casual fan has become more and more difficult.
Well, it used to be you could only be.
I was at Dad's weekend down at my daughter's sorority at Purdue, and there were a couple of guys that had kids at SEC schools and Big Ten schools. This is all we talked about, was the NIL stuff and how it's ruining everything.
Well, it's let me I say next week I want to talk to you guys about this in depth. Here's where it kind of I don't you know this is going back a ways, Russell.
Uh-huh.
I actually was at the I used to stop by basketball practice once in a while, and you know it was open. You go and sit, and because Digger Phelps really knew how to. Matter of fact, who's the guy that's on national TV? The announcer. Oh God, what's his name?
Not Corso.
No, the announcer, the
Digger Dick Vitale.
No, the guy. He's a color man. Tall black kid, went to Notre Dame. What the hell's his name? Really, really good announcer. Really good guy. And was a good ball player. And the guy said to him, out of all the coaches that you coached, that you played for, who had the best, like, 1 minute and 2 minute drill in basketball? And he goes, well, that's easy, Digger Phelps. Because we would practice that every night, put 30 seconds on the clock, put 20 seconds on the clock. Because most coaches don't. I'll think of his name. But he's on ESPN or whatever. But I used to go to watch the practices, and I was there get a load of this. This is how long ago this was. Back in those days, everybody's wearing like Converse All-Stars, right? They were like the only shoes. In in a guy comes in with a big cart full of shoes. I don't know if it were Adidas or what they were. It was the first time the basketball team or Digger got a shoe contract. That was at night. And all these guys put on the new shoes. They grab their size. They play for like 30 minutes and they go, these shoes suck. They wouldn't put their Converse back on because they said they're too hot. They're, you know, whatever, your feet are slipping in there. But this all kind of went forward. Eric Parsegian made like 60 grand a year or something. And, you know, he might have had a radio show locally. But then when these contracts came with the shoe contract, NCAA had all these kind of weirdo rules. Only the head coach could get the money from the shoe contract. He couldn't, because the assistant coaches, I think, were, God, Russell, I'm saying they were limited to 40, 50 grand a year, 60 maybe? And it's not that
they
long
weren't
ago.
Doing it, they weren't doing it for the money.
And well, but I mean, it was a job. I mean, 60 grand a year in 1975 wasn't horrible.
Right.
And, matter of fact, it was not horrible at all. But, you know, he lived in a small town and, you know, he's playing golf for free. But I'm saying it, he couldn't share that money with the. This all of a sudden started to increase. I would say that when I was in school, your education and, you know, maybe a few of the stars could have made money somewhere, but you're only limited to two games a year on national TV, on Channel 7, right? And it was part of the wide world of sports. All the rest was local TV. But you could only be on, so the Irish were always on, Southern Cal was always on, and then another game earlier in the year, it could be Michigan or somebody. And then all of a sudden, everybody got their own. But this as this started to expand, it was kept so narrowly with a few people. If it would have gone to some sort of a way where, okay, even simple stuff, and I used to say this when I was in school, even simple stuff. I mean, I knew a lot of guys. I mean, tuition was, you know, relatively inexpensive, but still some people couldn't make it. You could get a package where you made, I'm going to say, $3 an hour in the dining hall, cleaning the dishes, doing something. And I always thought, well, for God's sake, the guys that are going to football practice 3 hours a day, they should at least get paid as if they're working in the dining hall. I mean, can't you give them, you know, $10 an afternoon or something so they could buy a pizza at night? I mean, at some point, now, then all of a sudden, when I first started, the football team arrived on campus. We started school the day after Labor Day, so you showed up Labor Day weekend. I'm going to say the football team showed up 10 days before that. So those guys could actually have a summer job like regular people. Then all of a sudden it got to, oh, no, you got to get here, you know, first week in August. Well, don't you have to at least pay the guys for the 3 weeks they have to quit their summer job early? I mean, there was no common sense anywhere along this whole chain. Until all of a sudden...
Yeah, no, it was... I had a couple of friends that at Memphis State that were... on the golf team, but you know, luckily they came from families where they didn't have to worry about working. Plus, they lived at home, which really reduced all of the expenses big time. You know, I never understood how college athletes could get by with you know, you couldn't take a girl on a date.
No,
you know, that was always my thing, was you just didn't have any money to. The guys that played football at Memphis State, they just sat around the football dorm all day, all night on the weekends, and just did nothing.
Well, I remember Notre Dame got...
Heaven forbid you were a girl and you walked near the football dorm.
Well, Notre Dame got written up for all these violations. Well, one of the violations was one of the kid's uncle died, and somebody gave him like $20 for the Greyhound fare to go back to Gary or something.
Oh, I'll give you probably my favorite example in forever. On an NCAA violation, I think it was Rick Majerus. Was he the basketball coach at Utah? I'm bad with names.
But he went around a while. He ended up in the pros, didn't he?
He may have. But
you know what? He ended up at West Virginia, didn't he? Was that the same guy?
No, you're thinking of Bobby Huggins.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so whoever the coach at Utah was years and years and years ago, he was a single guy and. Like me down in Indiana, he lived in a hotel. He had some of his players who couldn't get home for Thanksgiving over for dinner at the hotel and got dinged by the NCAA for giving benefits he shouldn't given in the form of a free meal. If he had cooked it himself, it wouldn't have been a violation.
The same thing happened, or almost happened. Something was going down at Notre Dame, and they had a...
So it was silly on the opposite end.
They had some kind of a deal where, I don't know, was the football team or somebody had a playoff or a game. Somehow it wasn't like on TV or something, but you could go to the convocation center and they were going to have it on TV, and it was, you know, $5 and you got hot dogs and Cokes or something. None of the basketball players could go because it was $5 or something along those lines. They even though they were students, they couldn't get in for free or whatever.
They couldn't go, and nobody could buy a ticket.
And nobody could give them the $5 or some crazy crap. Hey, I wanted to ask you about, I was talking to Kevin, and what is the deal? Your bosom buddy Ray Dalio came out with...
Oh, my God. You know what? You're going to retract that right now, or I'm leaving this program.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, I'm very
sorry. Well, I didn't know you.
Humans on God's green earth.
Oh, I didn't know you were...
Oh, my God. Don't even get me started on that.
Well,
guy.
He's one of three or four people that came out yesterday.
He's an awful human being.
Oh, I didn't know that at all. I didn't know that.
I don't
know these guys like you do. I just know he comes out with these prognostications once in a while, and he must...
Right, and I don't know why in the world anybody listens to him. But
he's one of like three or...
for him at his hedge fund was...
Oh, I didn't know you did that. Oops, I'm sorry. I didn't know. I didn't go there on purpose.
No, I didn't work for him. But if you worked for him at his fund, I mean, he treated people so ridiculously badly.
Oh, see, I didn't know any of that. I'm sorry.
He is just a terrible human being.
Wow. I didn't...
So what is Ray Dalio saying?
Anyway, he came out.
And
he,
I'll give you a prime example. I think that guy's got a lot of money stuck in China, and he was telling people to continue to invest in China when it was falling. Oh. He continues to tell everybody to pump money out of China.
See, to me, he was just another one of these guys that gets on there and pontificates once in a while. I didn't know anything about his history. But he came out and said that everybody should be 15% of their portfolio should be gold. Even at $4,000 an ounce. Now, you know, I've had a lot of people in gold for a
He's probably thinking, although he's not really managing money anymore. But you know,
but he was one of like...
The second he says it, I assume he's taking the other side.
Well, but he was one of like four people that have a name that said that in the last couple of days. So, my question to you was: 15% of your portfolio. Good Lord, that's a hell of a lot of gold. We have that much gold in the world.
Put it in gold. If you're going to do something like that, put it in. You know, spread it out across. Gold, silver, copper, and companies directly associated with them. If you really believe in that thesis, because
as you know,
got some catching up to do.
As you know, for a lot of reasons, maybe not including me being a genius, because I never proclaimed to be. You've known for a long time that I have a bigger gold position than most for my clients.
Yeah.
Only because, and I'm as you know, I'm honest. So are you. Only because a lot of my clients had a lot of stuff other places already in the market. We're looking to do something a little different. So 2-3 years ago, I'm very overweighted in gold. I repeat, not because I'm a genius, but because it was right for those people because they had other stuff other places.
Yeah.
I mean, can I make it any plainer? I mean, it's not like I said, sell all your stocks, buy gold. I never said that. So anyway, we've got a big position in there and have for a long time. And you know what, Russell? I'm a trader at heart. I look at the GDX, which is Gold Miners Index, pushing 79. I can't like it as much as I did at 32. Yet, I'm not so sure. Am I even talking gold or am I talking dollars? And if we're going to keep pouring dollars into the system, is gold, GDX, are they going to keep going up? Not because of them, but because of what we're counting them in, which is dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's my question to the professor. I think I got to stay in here. I mean, I'll keep my puts in case it goes down. But it does make me nervous that these kind of guys start telling you to buy at 4,000 when they were quiet at 2,000.
Exactly.
But I mean, I don't see the Fed pulling back. Do you?
No, I don't. I got the question yesterday from a reporter about why does the stock market keep holding in the way that it's holding in, and I got to do a very nice explanation of how money's got to find a home, and stocks seem to be the only home that money knows these days, and that until we start getting a full picture of what's going on in the overall economy again, we might be kind of in a stagnant situation here. No, gold is, I mean, I'm can't imagine gold's going right back to 2,000 in the next 3 months. But
well, everybody's saying 5,000 now. Who's whoever everybody is.
And you know, the better person that I, you know, I and everybody has positive and negative opinions about all these guys. I actually have a pretty positive opinion around Ken Griffin. And I saw him speaking the other day, and he was talking about how what you're really seeing with respect to gold and a few other things is people trying to de-dollarize themselves.
Well, I mean, if you were to, and again, I I'm this slave to this monetarist thing. Because it's just the way, you know, it's just the way I am. It's just the way I was trained. I don't see. You know, if you say to me in the next 10 years, the Fed on their own, this is before Trump, for the last 20 years has been pouring money into the system, favoring some people in society versus others. Okay, now
it's favoring asset owners over everybody else.
No, but if that's going to continue, and let's say in the next 6 years, the money supply is going to be up 70%. I got news for you. Gold's going to be at 6,500. I mean, it's not because of gold. It's because the value of the dollar in your pocket's dropping in relation to everything else.
And that might be a decent, you know, I don't know if that was part of his argument or not, but I do think that trying to diversify yourself away from the dollar or be prepared for dollar weakness is probably not such a bad idea. I think that's why gold's at 4,000. I think that's what people are looking at.
Why, Russell? And you are a serious professor. But if I were to ask you on national TV and say, "What about the value of the dollar?" You might be the only person that won't do this. But the Rick Santellis of the world and everybody else, and I'm not accusing him of being a professor like you, but they're going to say, what do you mean? It's held in there against the pound. It's held in there against the yen. It's held in there against the euro. And that's not what I talk about. And I don't think
it's looking at
it. What is it in relation to this cup of coffee on my desk? I mean, if the dollar goes down 50%, guess what? This 385 coffee is going to be 760 a year from now. And why does nobody talk like that?
No, it's funny. Your favorite new professor, I know I'm not your favorite anymore. She was over at the house a couple of days ago, and we've been kicking around. We've been doing carry trade type research, and we have decided to take a look at this. You may have not heard this one in a long time. She just blurted out, "What about that McDonald's indicator?"
Yeah.
Which is basically looking at the price of a Big Mac at different places around the world, and you know, just seeing what currencies can, you know, how much of a Big Mac can you buy based on your currency. And we're thinking about using the Big Mac indicator against some carry trade stuff and seeing what we find.
By the way, last week was spectacular, and I'm gonna throw you a compliment. You know, I can't do that too much because, you know, your head's gonna keep going up. She reminds me so much of you. In a sense that every time we touch on a different subject, I want to pursue that subject because both of you have, as my uncle used to say, you have depths yet to be sounded. There's stuff you know. It's stunning that every time we go into a different spot.
You know what? It's 2 years of driving back and forth to Indiana together in the car. We even said if they put a microphone in there with us, it probably would have been a pretty good podcast sometimes.
Well, I'm dying to talk to her.
I think that's where that comes from. But I'll definitely take the compliment on that one. My poor wife, when we started diving into that one, was sitting at the kitchen table with us and just stood up and literally threw her arms up in the air and was like, "I'm not participating in this." And I just looked at her and said, "Now you know what we're talking about all the time."
Oh God! Well, you know, I'm dying to talk to her about the Vietnam era a little bit because I actually had a chance.
That's what she said. Yeah.
Well, but I ended up having a been able to talk. She's been on the show. I mentioned her all the time, and hopefully she'll be back on next Monday. Diane Kelly, who's I mean, she does all the work for the veterans' homes. And when I say the work, I mean, you know, get this. Mm-hmm. She's there every Sunday at Hines at 5 in the morning to participate in Mass for the people that can make it down there. And for those who can't, she runs around the place and gives communion to people. This is her Sunday morning in Maywood. And and she does the Russell House. And they just opened up the one up there, and she was... I cornered her for about 45 minutes over at Audrey's. And went through the whole list of the people in all the different wars and what their problems are and how they're trying to deal with them and how, basically, in some areas, nobody cares about them. Families, you know, they were gone for 20 years in the military, and family's gone or whatever, don't have anybody go see them. It's the saddest thing you've ever come across. And but she went through the different, like, she says pretty much, I mean, they're done with the World War II guys. I mean, they're all dead. There's a few around, yeah, but not very many. Korea, same thing. I mean, it's, you got some around, but then you're Vietnam and the proliferation of cancer and all the other stuff that goes with it. Then you've got the Afghanistan. We actually had Gulf War One. There's a lot of those guys. But they're running into a lot of issues, and again, I'll talk to Dr. Demiak about it, Nick. A lot of issues with, you know, some of the things they were exposed to differently, where people have all kinds of diseases that are brought upon by, you know, stuff they inhaled and things like that, and how that's a problem. Then, you know, maybe some of the vaccines weren't what they should have had, and Lou has actually sued the government on a couple of them regarding, you know, the anthrax vaccine they gave people wasn't even approved by anybody. I mean, but she says now they're having a real lot of mental issues.
And of course,
some of them are from active duty people, because the veterans home up at Gray's Lake, where they just opened up the new Russell House, is it's, I think, the only one designed for veterans and active duty, because they also service, isn't that the Naval Basic Training there, right? It's still up at Great Lake.
I think so.
So they get people from both sides. So if some kid, like, breaks an ankle in training and he's in the hospital, the parents are coming up and staying at Russell House while they're visiting the kid who's got the broken leg or whatever. And but she said there's a lot of mental stuff going on that maybe either people didn't pay attention to before or whatever. And now a lot of these places are not designed for that, so they're trying to hire therapists and so forth in a lot of the places. But it's really it's, plus she says there's so many veterans homes, and as people from war to war die off, I said, Diane, don't worry, we'll always fill them up with people, unfortunately. Which is scary even. But hey, well, let's go to break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you about a conversation I had with a guy over at the club the other night, and how it's, the guy never works out. He just gets stressed up and walks around with his phone and then leaves, which is cool. But the S&P futures up 8, the NASDAQ futures up 24, gold to the moon. We'll talk about that in a second. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-401.
8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tim Howe. Andrew on the board. S&P futures are up 675. NASDAQ futures up 15. We have the big guys coming out yesterday. Big guys, some guys coming out and saying you got to buy gold at 4,000. You're gonna buy it in record territory. But that was the story. Anyway, over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 161.7%. FTSE up 79.8. CAC around up 64.8. So. Pretty bullish over in Europe today. Asia, we got the Nikkei down 215.4%. Hang Seng is down 128 at 26,829. Shanghai's up 20, but they've not traded in like 5 days, so be careful on that one. Some of the other guys, they're sort of doing a catch up over there. But I don't know why they were closed, but they were. Maybe Russell knows. 10-year is down 2 basis points, 4.10. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.67. Oil, which has been a serious disappointment if you're long oil. It's up a buck today, trying to get back to that 63 number, 62.73. Back and forth, 64.5 down to 61.5, back to 65. It's right in that range. Brent up 94 cents, 66.39. Gold, get a load of this, 4,061, up 56 bucks. Silver up $1.12, that's 2.5%, 48.63. Those are big moves. FX. A dollar's contenders is dollar's getting stronger versus the euro. We're down to 116.4. We were over 117 maybe a week ago. The pound 134.1. Again, we were over 135 a week ago. So these are pretty good movements in these currencies. Crypto up $1,000, 122.6898. What do you got for us, Traffic, Weather, Sports? Cubs could be out today.
Yeah, hopefully not. But hopefully we will not. See. It is Wednesday, October 8th here in Chicago. It is 7:34, and just a little bit of basketball. The Bulls, a little bit of good news here. The Bulls won their final preseason game, and that's against the Cavaliers, 118-117. And yep, later today, we have the Cubs against the Brewers once again. That is going to be at 4:08 p.m. Hopefully they can sneak out one win here. Over to Chicago, weather is currently 55 degrees. It's going to be sunny and breezy today. Nice afternoon for baseball. We're going to have a high of 63. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 72 degrees. It's going to be hot with plenty of sunshine. It's again, danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for extended periods of time. They're going to have a high of 101. And finally,
it's got to be late in the year for those guys to be over 100.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I was going to say, I mentioned this morning, I'm so glad that we are finally dipping down here in Chicago. It has been way too hot. But for Chicago traffic, it is looking to be heavy on nearly every inbound expressway. Only thing to note so far is the setup for the Chicago Marathon is beginning. So some closures are going to take place on Balbo and around Grant Park. And that's going to be between Columbus Drive. The closures on Balbo will be between Columbus Drive and Lakeshore. That is all I got. Back to you.
Russell, two things. I mentioned to Kevin earlier, what if, you know, as you know, I manage money for people, or we do here at PTI, and question is, we've been lucky, I could say brilliant, we were lucky we were in the gold up to here, now it's record highs, and I still like it a little bit, but there's no way I like it as much as I did 40 bucks ago in the gold miners index, and you can't like gold as much at 4,000 as you did 2,000, I'm sorry, you just can't, you know, even if you think they're going to mess with the dollar more. I asked my brother, I said, okay, somebody sends us a check for $1 million today, what exactly are we going to do with it? And he likes a couple of the sectors. You know, I won't go into which one because we're not giving. But he said the thing that's been the hottest, in addition to the gold, is all this uranium stuff. And we're down to like one enrichment plant. You ever heard of this firm called Urenco in New Mexico?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
But how much, I mean, are we, if we decide, this administration or anybody else, that we're going to build 10 nuclear plants in the next decade, when does the first one start up? 8 years from now? I mean, can you buy these guys today?
World War III.
Yeah, I mean, can we?
I mean, no.
I mean,
in a while.
I mean, Sam, I don't know how you...
It takes a long time. Now, I do think that there's the possibility of restarting some of them. And well, I don't know if that's quicker or not. It just doesn't sound safe, does it?
Well, we went through that a little bit with Carl yesterday. The one in Coloma up in Michigan is being restarted. But that thing, and one of the ones at Three Mile Island, I think, is being restarted. But I think what's happening there, and again, this is from Carl, they weren't demolished. They were just shut off.
Yeah, they were.
So they were, yeah, they were 6 months to a year. Yeah.
For lack of a better way to say it, they were turned off.
Yeah. But they weren't.
There's more to it than that.
But there was some maintenance. I like to use the term mothballed, but I don't know if that's the term they use. They use that with ships, right? So, yeah, a couple of them are coming back online. I think privately, who's buying? Is it Microsoft that's buying? Somebody's buying all the power from the one in Coloma. And I think somebody wants to buy the, is it Amazon? Anyway, a couple of the companies that are really big into AI, they're starting them up so they can essentially have a captured electrical supply. I don't know if they're going into the power grid the same way that they used to. But anyway, we'll have Carl talk about that on Friday a little bit. But I don't know about Zion. That thing, I think, is a dead dog. But I don't know how many of them are shut off that can come back on. So there might be a little movement there, but it's the same, you know, and I'll use the name because he's one of, it's the same thing that, you know, Ray Dalio said, you should be 15% in gold. Well, the stock market's $50 trillion. Can we really put $7.5 trillion in gold tomorrow? I mean, really? I mean, even if you like uranium, how much can you drive the stock of this company up? Could I all of a sudden put 15, 20, 25 investors in it's just not big of an industry. I guess I should have a little bit in there maybe, but how much can you really put in there? It's not that big.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really even enough stocks for an ETF in that one.
Right.
You know, because it's an area I actually own one of them.
Well, so, okay, that's not surprising. Okay. But how many? There's like
one of them because I was at a, and I talked about this a while back. I was at a presentation where the governor of Indiana said that nuclear is going to be a big solution to a lot of our problems. And it was the first time I'd ever heard a politician say that. And there's a, I forgot exactly, there's a nuclear oriented company, CAMCO. CCJ is the ticker. And, you know, that's always been my go to for that space. And I told the students at the table, I was like, I bought the stock as the governor said it. I was like,
well, now, are those guys, these guys I'm talking about, is Urenco is the only commercial uranium enrichment facility. What is CCJ? Right. Do they mine it or what?
It's funny. I'm opening my Bloomberg and trying to look them up right now to give you to make sure I say it correctly. But that's just always been my go-to because there's not a nuclear ETF. And when I heard somebody from government say that the solution to a lot of the problems are going to be nuclear and Indiana is going to be at the forefront of that, that right there, a politician saying we got to do nuclear. That's a trend change in my mind. And that's one of those things where you just kind of have institutional knowledge and you hear something and you're like, oh, I got to do this right now. But I bought it in front of my students and it was up like almost 50%
wow.
Over a pretty short period of time. So they thought I was some kind of genius, which, you know, it's not that easy, guys, I promise.
Well, that's when you tell me you're every kind of genius, not some kind.
Yeah, and there, I talked slow enough now that I've got my Bloomberg open. CAMCO, they do... It counts as not... Minesverse converts and fabricates uranium. They're a uranium miner. So that's what I thought. I just didn't want to say
that. Are they in the U.S. or where?
And I've already opened myself up by griping about Ray Dalio. Probably
that's all right.
Have guys in dark glasses show up at my door later today again.
You're fine. With the
I paid the mid-30s for CCJ. It's up. It's almost at 90 now. So
now, are they in the U.S. Or where are they?
Do what?
Are the mines in the U.S. or somewhere else?
They're all over the world.
Oh, okay,
I didn't know that. I just know that they're like basically they're your choice. In my mind, they've always been your choice if you need exposure to the nuclear industry. And you know, the stock has had fits and starts based on rumors around nuclear, but back in the spring was when you had more than one politician starting to talk about this was an area that's going to save us from a lot of issues.
Well, as somebody,
and you know what it's going to replace in Indiana?
What
is the visible source of energy in Indiana that everybody comments on?
What, a windmill? Windmills.
What?
The windmills.
Yeah, the wind turbines.
Yeah.
He was saying the wind turbines aren't going to be able to do it anymore. We're going to have to go nuclear. That's what he was saying.
Well, you're not going to turn them off.
A couple of students that work in the energy industry and are associated with what's going on with the wind turbines, and their efficiency has been reduced to the point that they need to be repaired, and the repairs wouldn't pay for themselves. So they're just kind of dying on the vine out there.
Well, it's, you know, this is all very local to me, and if you're going to have stuff in this area, you need things that can be 24-hour, which is nuclear, and it's coal, and it's
right.
All that kind of stuff.
Right.
I'm not saying we should try to build the coal plants, but a lot of it's local. I mean, I always, mm-hmm. Rag about this one constantly, that I have no idea why there isn't massive amounts of solar out near Las Vegas, because for God's sake, the energy draw is for air conditioning during the day, which, and that's when solar works.
Oh,
right?
Oh yeah, no.
I think you need to match what you have to what you have. I mean, I'm not going to say anything bad about solar. I just think that in Chicago it's marginal, but in the desert, it seems to me like a pretty good idea when everybody's running their air conditioners all day. But that would just be me. You know, if you're in an area that has a lot of wind, wind turbines seem like a pretty good idea to me. I mean, if you have the infrastructure, what do they call it, the grid and stuff that gets the stuff from there to you, it would have a pretty mm-hmm. good grid and all those kinds of things. This is there's a many variables to this. That's why, it always kind of bugs me, Russell. That's why I love having you guys on. It bugs me when people, they think every equation has got one variable. No. Most equations, if they all had one variable, anybody could solve them, right? But they don't. They have a bazillion variables in there. Hey, I want to, we have some time. I don't want to dig into this recession map a little bit, because you get around more than I do. And the listener sent me this, who knows how accurate mm-hmm. it is, but I'm just using it as a talking point. It's by MarketWatch. Who the hell those guys are? Well, actually, I use their...
You know what? They're actually part of the Wall Street Journal now.
Okay, but I use their calendars and calendars and stuff all the time. Anyway, mm-hmm. but they've got 22 states that are now in a recession.
Read that.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the map here, and like Kevin was saying, how well that whole Elkhart, South Bend, all the way down to Lafayette, with the universities and distribution systems and all that stuff, how he had a number, God, he told me, that in one of those areas, the employment, the percentage of people working, of the percentage of labor force is like over 90%. Mm-hmm. We're countrywide, it's, 58. It's horrible. But now in our area, they have, this is my question to you, is the major agricultural states here, I would say Illinois, Iowa, they both have a recession. They've got South Dakota in recession, Minnesota in recession, Wyoming and Montana in recession. They've got Missouri treading water, Wisconsin treading water. They got Indiana as an expansion, and they got Ohio treading water. Now, my question to Kevin, and he told me to kick the downstate part to you, basically. I think up along the toll road, they're in a serious expansion, maybe with Peru and other stuff. I don't see how an agrarian state, the agrarian piece, is doing well. I mean,
we're not. It's really distribution. It's mostly distribution and manufacturing.
Well, Greg Pappas, 2 years ago, mm-hmm. He's our farm guy, but now he's trading at 7 in the morning, so he can't help us with the show much anymore. But 2 years ago, he said the average farmer now, this is the mean, median, I don't know, made 200 and some grand, and the estimate for last year which would be 2024, was like 67 grand. I have not heard his number this year. I'll bet it's not so good. Because I don't think agricultural prices are up that much, and I think we had kind of a bumper crop, right? And we've got all the people, it doesn't surprise me, the Minnesota, South Dakota area, which is a lot of soybeans going west to China. That's almost turned off, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, they keep talking about that, and you know, soybean futures have been in a range between 10 and 11 for almost a year.
Right, but it's basis risk.
Yeah,
those guys, their stuff goes by rail west for export.
Yeah.
There's no way that they can get their $10 bushel soybean down in New Orleans for less than $4 a bushel, probably.
Or whatever. Yeah, and it probably has gone up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's worse than the price would let you to believe. You would think that at 11. Guys are at least making a few bucks, right? At $11 or $12 a bushel. It's not the same as when it's 15, but
yeah.
But
I'm looking up spot prices now, and yeah, we're down in the last year. I'm looking at corn. We're down. The long term range is like we're around 390 on spot corn, and the range is anywhere from 8 to 3. I would say that's at the lower end.
I would say when I entered the business way to hell well back, I think corn was 260 a bushel in 1981.
I can remember getting caught short and being upset that it was over 4. Yeah. So
You were on the wrong. You don't have the license plates limit up where you bought the new car and got the new license plates?
I don't. You know my license plate says VIX on it. You know that.
Says what?
I shouldn't say that because then people, when I cut them off in traffic, they're going to get me.
I know a couple of guys who, way back in the day, had the license plates with their initials and stuff on.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to meet somebody in a hotel that's not your wife, a motel, it's not a really good idea.
Yeah, that's why I'm okay with my customized plate.
Yeah. we had a guy here that worked for us, Vietnam vet. It's a character, nice guy, but he used to work for First Stop. You remember Larry Kelch?
Yeah,
Well, Larry's no longer with us, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Not just the PTI, but not on this earth. Way back in the day, you know, he'd be 80 now, maybe, but way back in the day, he got license plates that just were two letters. Back when you could get them, you know? So for years and years and years, he had these license plates. And all of a sudden, like 15 years ago or 20 years ago, they start sending him a bill, and he didn't realize that they were charging him for vanity plates when they weren't vanity plates. He just got them when he got them. Well, you never heard a guy more pissed off yelling at the Secretary of State's office in the office about how he was being charged for vanity plates when they weren't vanity plates. But they had, like, screwed him for a decade. So you would think I don't have vanity plates, but
if you find out that he was paying extra?
I don't know. Somebody must have mentioned what their.
What I'm thinking.
Yeah, mentioned what theirs was and his was more. Yeah. But the weird part of it is you could understand if you want to be, the vain sort that needs vanity plates, that you pay for the, I could see paying $100 for somebody to stamp your plate out with your name on it. Or $200 bucks, or but why you have to pay every year for the sticker? I don't quite get, because once you got the plate, what's the difference? It's the same sticker, right?
Yeah, I think they want to.
Well, yeah, they want the dough.
Well, they want to make money.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that.
I can come up with an argument for it as well, but there's they need that money.
I have police plates.
You do now?
Yeah.
You know how many sets of fire and police plates? I should do a count sometime on my drive. In Indiana, I can never recall not seeing at least one set of Illinois fire and police plates.
Well, they're not supposed to be police plates. Okay, what they are is you're a contributor to the Patrolmen's Association that buys vests for people.
Okay.
So my dad was a policeman, so... Uh-huh. I said, I'll contribute to you guys. I wouldn't mind. I obviously love the police. I wouldn't mind. But it's supposed to say, you're a donator to the Patrolmen's Association. So you get the plate, and that's all it's supposed to mean. I mean, you could get a if you wanted to donate to the, what are the bird people? What are people who run around and look at birds? What are they called?
I know who it's talking about. Yes.
But you can donate to them and get a bird plate if you wanted. There's all kinds of plates you can get. So
In Tennessee, they have a pure black plate now.
Really?
And you can donate to blindness, to combat blindness, and the plate has a skull and crossbones on it.
Really? Well, I mean,
yeah, and my job is open at Vanderbilt. You know, those two things together make me think I need to move back home and finish my life in Tennessee.
Well, so get a load of this. I go there to get the thing, and they go, oh, no, you can't just give us the money. And I go, what do you mean? I want to help somebody out with their vest. Yeah. Oh, no, you... Are you a policeman? Well, no, I'm not. I just want to donate. Okay, well, is your dad a policeman? Well, he is, but he's dead. Well, somebody has to sign for you. All I'm trying to do is make a donation. I mean, where is this going? And they go, well, you can do it if you want, but we have to do a full background check on you. Well, now, you know my personality. Well, now, when they don't want me to have it, I got to have it, right? So,
of course.
You know, what did they say in Butch Cassidy? He won't leave until you ask him to stay. One of those kind of guys. So
yeah,
they do this massive background check through Interpol and the state police and everybody. So the lady calls me up and she goes, you can come over and make your donation. Like, thank God. Thank you very much. So I go over and I go, what is the deal with this? All I want to do is give you guys $100, for God's sake. And she goes, well, this is what we do. If your dad's not alive to sign it, you got to go through this. I said, how did I do it? She goes, everybody here is astounded. We've never seen anything this clean ever. She goes, did you never even have a ticket? I said, I think I had one when I was 20. She goes, well, it's not on here. The thing is totally clean. She goes, we're happy to have you. So it's what they put FP on there usually.
Mm-hmm.
The number then, but they put CP on mine, which basically said that I'm like an honorary policeman, which I'm not.
I like it. You're never getting pulled over.
Well, I mean, but I've been there with the nicest people. I donate. What I miss, though, is every year at my old school, St. John Fisher, they have a breakfast. And every year I forget to go, and next year I'm going to go where there's pancakes and sausage, and you donate and you meet all these people. That's a great group. You know, I need to go back to the old church, but that's a story that, well, I mean, there's stuff people do that are really good in this world still. I mean, it really is. I really enjoyed last week. I want to talk to you guys next week about the Vietnam. Anyway, but Indiana, how big do you think the bifurcation is between the northern counties and the southern?
It's not as different as you would think. The southern counties really are benefiting big time from distribution.
Okay.
And you should be asking me about this in early December after I've done my little my roadshow around Indiana like I do every November.
Well, Kevin says Purdue and Lafayette are absolutely in lockstep now, and Lafayette's a huge hub, and he thinks that Indianapolis is working really well with the university down there to where they've got this huge hub, all this stuff too.
Oh yeah, no, that's what I do. I work within the executive education department at IU, and I mean, I work in a lot of different departments. I teach in five different departments, but one of them is the executive education, where we deal with now I think I've talked about this before, like people from the NFL Players Association are in some of my classes this
fall.
Okay,
well, that's cool.
We've got a thing with WNBA. We have a thing with a lot of large corporations around the world where we'll have full cohorts from like Eli Lilly and places like that. But we continue to and I do think that IU for Indianapolis has helped out tremendously with consulting and, you know, bringing decent people in, and including students at IU Kelly at the Indianapolis campus. A good number of the seniors, or really the good seniors, are practically working full time already.
Really?
Yeah. I've got when I teach undergrad, I teach undergrad in Indianapolis, which I truly like, because IU Indy is a lot more like Memphis State than IU Bloomington. So I feel like I've got a bit more in common with the undergrads that are living at home, working two jobs, etc. But a lot of them, and we even have a program where you can get credit while you're working as a senior, because the employers have been having a hard time finding talented folks. So
Well, Kevin was yeah, Kevin just
It's not just the northern part of the state. The whole state is doing very, very well. There's an area between Indianapolis and Bloomington that's like one of the fastest growing areas in Indiana. We added that to our stop last year.
Really?
I think it's Johnson County. And a home builder sponsored it. They gave they gave out like 500 Yeti cups that probably cost $50 each to everybody that showed up. We were in a brand new conference facility that I think doubles as a winery or something like that. And you wouldn't have thought there would have been a whole lot there. But yeah, I wouldn't limit it just to the northern part of the state. I think the whole state has been doing very, very well.
Kevin just texted
this is the one that blows me away. My understanding is more packages come through the FedEx hub in Indianapolis than Memphis now.
Well, Kevin just said Louisville's a big UPS hub, and so Southern Indiana, a lot of
they
people
are
right there. Hey, you got
in fact, and one of my stops on the state tour is New Albany, which is a major Indiana suburb of Louisville.
All right, I got a question here. As we have packets, and unfortunately, I don't think Chicago is one of them, but we have packets where people are sort of getting this right. But I think, you know, as much as you want to see those packets, I still think we've got a very serious, overwhelming problem of, you know, 85% of the economy or more as we continue to drive, and I'll say it, everything toward rich people. I mean, I ran into this guy at the club.
Asset owners are benefiting a lot better than...
Well, here's what I think is the... If you could put it on the head of a pin, and I were to say, what's the single biggest problem in this country, which, of course, there's a million of them. I ran into a guy at the club the other night, and I've said this three times now, but... and he says when he started working for this firm, which I'm guess is 12, 13 years ago, he was making 60 G. You know, people tell me this stuff. I mean, I'm like Father Confessor, for God's sake. And mm-hmm. he says, you know, I should be up in the 80s now. And he said, even with this funky CPI, I should be in the 80s now. And he goes, I'm not. I'm like 70.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I put in January 2012 in the CPI calculator, 60 grand should be 86 grand today, and he's not close to that. And I'm going to say that I don't believe the CPI, and neither do you. So he probably really needs to be like 100, and he's like 70. So he, for 13 years, the guy's done nothing but lose ground.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to put, you know, if you were to say, Chief, what is the single, this is, has nothing to do with all the other stuff politicians are fighting about, this is the single biggest drag in this economy, and it's really, in my opinion, it's the reason why the right hates the left hates the right, because they're blaming each side for them not doing so well over a whole period of time, and there's blame sort of to go around, but a lot of the blame is, I think, what the Fed has been doing and what the government's been doing, and it's all going in a few spots, because you go to some of these places in Chicago now, Russell, you wouldn't believe the prices that are being charged and people throwing money around. Like it's next to nothing. Like money for nothing and the chicks for free.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is scary what people are willing to pay for stuff and not even blink. And yet other areas, everybody's cutting coupons and you're giving people 4% discount on their bill if they pay cash. I mean, it is unbelievable if you keep your eyes open, just noticing the differences as subtle as they are. Mm-hmm. I think. I mean, are you agreeing or not?
No, I totally agree. I spend my time in multiple places, and you know, I don't even want to talk about the cost of my Uber ride in New York last week to and from LaGuardia. It was about three times what I used to pay, maybe 5 years ago.
By the way, Kevin has a criticism for you.
Uh oh.
It's not New Albany, recent or otherwise. It's Nalbany.
Nalbany?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll ask them when I'm down there next month.
And it's not Louisville.
No, I know that's Louisville.
Yeah. And
yeah, I'm well aware of that. I just try not to be Southern.
I mean, it's like in you know, the old Texas coach, if you ever said Daryl Royal, who? Who? I mean, Daryl? Who? It's not Daryl Royal. Daryl? What is that? Was that the last gasp of a dying goat? What was that?
it was a bleat. That wasn't a name.
Yeah. So, are you here or are you there?
I'm here.
Are you going to the football games?
I'm actually going to start doing weekly hits from SIBO for one of the brokerage firms. So I'm not only close by, I'm going to be closer by.
I would always love to see you. Are you going to any football games? Your team looks pretty stout.
Went down to Purdue this past weekend, which didn't go particularly well. I do not have an Indiana game scheduled. They have 1 week every year where Kelly goes together, and the Kelly game was parents weekend at Purdue, so I didn't get to go to the Kelly game this year.
So senior,
and the Kelly game was Illinois.
Well, senior faculty members, you don't get tickets, I take it.
No, I don't get. I do for that. I do for one game.
All right.
I do for the Kelly game. So when it's our turn to go.
Well, you guys are still undefeated, right?
We are still undefeated. Yes.
What do you think of Penn State?
But we're also, you know, you guys brought up that this weekend there'll be some teams that are not undefeated after the weekend. We're playing Oregon at Oregon. I don't have high hopes for that one. I'm not totally bandwagoning on the football team until we get past that game.
What do you think of Penn State and their ass kicked? UCLA's like they didn't have a win, and the coach is blaming the travel.
That's just unfortunate. I would never want that job, and I could not do that job. But you've got to assume that's coaching.
Well, the guy said it was travel.
When your team gets beat down, Ted Lasso was a silly show, but you know he's the head coach of a sports team, and he doesn't know much about the sports, but he works with them. Yeah, it's kind of like in the show, he works with them psychologically and gets them motivated, etc. And that is part of being a coach. And after the heartbreak with Ohio State, I can see it being difficult to get a team up for a West Coast trip against an 0-4 team. They're just going to sleepwalk through that one.
Oh, yeah.
And they couldn't.
Well, the Irish did that last year in Northern Illinois, right? It was the year before.
Yeah.
And it happens. We are talking about 20-year-old kids. But, hey, good to talk to you. Are you guys both on next week? What are we doing?
I don't know. Do you want her on? I'll ask.
Anytime the two of you guys are on, it's a good day for me.
Okay, well, then I'll talk to her.
I like you both individually, and together we add even more, I think. So whatever you want to do. So there,
you can always ask her to be on.
Well, I mean, it wasn't like when she was here, she said, Russell, who? You know, she was nice to you.
Oh, I would hope so.
Oh, yeah. you have a great week. SP Futures up 8 and NASDAQ Futures up 22. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.